a most detailed account of what was said to be the seven highest degrees of secret Egyptian initiation was first published in Germany in the 18th century. This strange and very exhaustive document combines many elements from the ancient mysteries. It seems to come from Greek sources, because many of the words used are Greek. And it could well be that we have here the modern beginnings of an attempted revival of ancient mysteries. Whatever it is not one of those fanciful and spurious ones which used to be printed merely to attract the credulous, because it is plausible in containing the sort of material which might well have formed the content of an initiation and mind-conditioning system. The earliest version known is in the form of an anonymous pamphlet, probably not intended for public sale, of 30-odd pages printed in 1785. Right in that area of history is momentous occurrences. It was republished in a French translation 30 years later, purporting to be the ritual of the master degree in Freemasonry. And if you know anything about the master degree in Freemasonry, you will soon see that it certainly is exact in its descriptions. The French editor claims that it is a composite ritual derived from the works of some 15 Greek and Roman writers. This degree, we are told, was open to Egyptian kings and priests alone, and only those specially recommended by an initiate could enter it. The usual procedure was that the pharaoh himself introduced the candidate to the priests. By them, he was sent from Heliopolis, the city of the sun, and you'll never escape from the sun when you're studying the mysteries, to the Memphis priests. From there, he went to Thebes. He was circumcised, forbidden to eat poultry or fish, and generally had to abstain from wine. He was put for several months in an underground cave and asked to write down his reflections. When he had done this, he was led to a passage supported by the pillars of Hermes, where he had to learn certain things which were inscribed thereon. As soon as he was word perfect, the Thesmorphos, or the introducer, came to him with a strong whip to keep the uninitiated or the profane at bay. He was blindfolded and his hands bound with cords. Now follows the procedure from the first degree of the select body. The candidate was led to the gate of men, where the introducer touched the shoulder of an apprentice, Portophorus, standing there on guard. He in turn knocked on the gate, which was opened. When the aspirant entered, he was questioned on various manners by the hierophant, after which he was led around the Barantha in an artificial storm of wind, rain, thunder, and lightning. If he showed no sign of fear, Menes, the expounder, explained the laws of the Crata Rapoa, to which he had to agree. He was then taken in front of the Hierophant, made to kneel, and vowed fidelity with a sword point at his throat. As witness, he called upon the sun, moon, and stars. And where have you heard that before? His eyes were then unbandaged, and he was placed between two spare pillars called battiles, where lay a ladder of seven steps, behind which were eight doors of different metals of gradually increasing purity. The Hierophant, then addressing those present as many Musai, or children of the work of celestial investigation, exhorted them to govern their passions and fix their thoughts upon God. Now the sun, the moon, and the stars, you should know by now, represent the doctrine, the church, and the initiates. The candidate was taught, folks, that the latter symbolized the wanderings of the soul. He was told the causes of wind, thunder, and lightning, and given other valuable information, such as medical lore. He was given the password of recognition of this degree, which was, and I spell it because I don't know the correct pronunciation, A-M-O-U-N, meaning secrecy. He was taught a grip given a pyramidal cap and an apron called xylon. Around his neck was a collar, and he wore no other clothes. His duty was to guard the gate of men in his turn. The Portophorus was now able, after showing his devotion, to proceed to the second degree. Following a prolonged fast, he was taken into a dark chamber called Endymion, the Invitation Grotto. He was now of the degree of Neocorus. Handsome women brought him dainty food. They were the wives of the priest who endeavored to excite his love. If he resisted these advances, he was further lectured by the master of ceremonies and led into an assembly where the stolista, or water bearer, poured water over him. Then a living serpent was thrown at him. The whole room was full of snakes to test his courage. He was then led to two high pillars between which stood a griffin driving a wheel before him. The pillars symbolized east and west. The griffin, the sun, and the wheel of four spokes, the four seasons. He was taught the use of the level and instructed in geometry and architecture. He received a rod entwined by serpents, and that rod is still used today by the medical community. It's called the caducus. And he received the password, heave, meaning serpent, and was told the story of the fall of man. The sign consisted in crossing the arms over the chest, and his duty was to wash the pillars. Now, when the initiate was initiated into the third degree, the member was given the title of Melanophorus. He was led to an anteroom over whose door was written, Gate of Death. The room was full of copies of embalmed bodies and coffins. Here, too, were a number of dissectors, embalmers, and so on. In the center stood the coffin of Osiris. The Melanophorus was asked if he had had a hand in the assassination of his master. On his denying the question, he was seized by two Tapaxites, are men who buried the dead, and led into a hall where he found all the other Melanophores clothed in black. The king himself, who always was present on these occasions, addressed him in an apparently friendly way, begging him, if he did not feel courage enough to undergo the test now to be applied to him, to accept the golden crown he was offering him. Well, he had already been coached to refuse the crown and tread it underfoot. At this insult, the king called for revenge. Raising his sacrificial axe, he touched the head of the initiate. And in one famous initiation, the king actually beheaded the man. The two corpse carriers threw him on the ground, and the embalmers wrapped him in bandages. All who were present wept. Now he was led to a gate over which was written, Sanctuary of the Spirits. Now the initiate was not supposed to be beheaded in that one famous initiation. And I don't know what they chalked that up to. Now, standing before the gate, the initiate waited. On its being opened, thunder and lightning struck the apparently dead man. Chan received him as a spirit into his boat and carried him to the judges of Hades. Pluto sat on his judgment seat, while Rhadamanthus and Minos, as well as Aethon, Nicreus, Alastor, and Orpheus, stood beside him. Very severe questions were put to him as to his former life, and finally he was sentenced to remain in these subterranean vaults. Now remember, this is an initiation, which sometimes lasts for months and even years. The bandages were removed, and he was told never to desire blood, never to leave a corpse unburied, and to believe in the resurrection of the dead and the judgment to come. Now remember, this is long centuries before Christianity. He was taught coffin decoration and the peculiar hierogrammatical script. The sign was an embrace to express the days of wrath. He was kept in these underground chambers until thought fit to proceed to a higher degree. These, quote, days of wrath, unquote, generally lasted for a year and a half, until the initiate was ready for promotion to the fourth degree. The Battle of the Shades. He was handed a sword and a shield and taken through dark passages. He met certain persons presenting a frightful appearance, carrying torches and serpents. He was attacked with the cry of Panis. He defended himself bravely, but was always taken prisoner. His eyes were bandaged and a cord placed around his neck. Dragging him into a hall, the specters disappeared. He was led into the assembly of initiates and his eyes unbandaged. Before him, he saw a magnificent hall decorated with beautiful paintings. The king and the highest dignitary, the demiurgos, were present. All were wearing their alidai, an Egyptian order composed of sapphires. Among those present were the secretary, the treasurer, and the master of feats. The orator made a speech congratulating the new member on his fortitude. He was given a drink called Sais, which he drank to the dregs. And this was probably the ritual drink of honey or milk, water, wine, and gruel, and perhaps some hypnotic drug. He donned the boots of Anubis, took up the shield of Isis, put on the cloak and cap of Orcus. He was handed a sword and told that he must cut off the head of the next person he met in a cave and bring it back to the king. This cave was pointed out to him. Entering it, he saw what seemed to be a beautiful woman, but in reality was a model of one. Now notice, it's a woman. He seized this by the hair and severed the head. This he brought back to the monarch, who praised him, telling him that he had symbolically won the head of the Gorgon, wife of Typhon, who had caused the death of Osiris. He was now permitted always to wear the dress which had been given to him, and he was entered in a book as one of the judges of the land. Notice that, one of the judges of the land. He was able to communicate at any time with the king and received an allowance from the court. He was invested with an order, that of Isis, in the shape of an owl, and it was revealed to him that the secret name of the great lawgiver was J-O-A, Joa, which was also the password of this degree. But the password for the meetings of the Christophori, as the fourth degree initiates were called, was Sassicus. The fifth degree, that of Balahate, could not now be refused to the Chrysophorus if he demanded or requested it. He was led to a hall to watch a play at which he was the only onlooker. Other members of the degree went through the hall as if looking for something. One drew his sword and the terrible figure of Typhon appeared. Of course, he was slain. And now the due Balahate was told that Typhon represented fire, a terrible element which was at the same time indispensable. The password was Chimia, and the teaching was in chemistry, or alchemy. In order to become an astronomer of the Gate of the Gods, the sixth degree, the candidate was taken to the Hall of Assembly, bound and led to the Gate of Death. He was shown corpses which had been cast into water and worn where he looked at the pictures of the gods while their histories were explained to him. A priestly dance took place, symbolizing the course of the heavenly bodies. He saw a list of members of the order throughout the world and learned the password Ibis for watchfulness. The last and the highest degree was that of Propheta, in which all secrets were laid bare. It was conferred following public processions, and when the permission of the king and all the highest members had been obtained, the members secretly left the city by night and retired to some houses built in a square and surrounded by pillars by the sides of which were placed alternately a shield and a coffin, whose rooms were painted with representations of human life. Now these houses were called maneras, for the people believed them to be visited by the manes of departed men. On their arrival at these houses, the new member, now called Prophet, or Saphanath Panka, a man who knows the secrets, was given a drink called Oimelas, and told that now all trials were over. He received a cross of peculiar significance, which he was always to wear. He was clothed in a wide, white-striped dress called itangi. The usual sign was crossing his arms in his wide sleeves. He could peruse all the sacred books written in the Ammonite language. His greatest privilege was having a vote in the election of a king, and the password was Adan. These mystical societies always continued, and one of special interest is the powerful society in Afghanistan in ancient times called the Roshaniya, or Illuminated Ones. There are actually references to this mystical cult going all the way back through history to the House of Wisdom at Cairo. The major tenets of this cult were the abolition of private property, the elimination of religion, the elimination of nation states, the belief that illumination emanated from the supreme being who desired a class of perfect men and women to carry out the organization and direction of the world, belief in a plan to reshape the social system of the world by first taking control of individual countries one by one, and the belief that after reaching the fourth degree, one could communicate directly with the unknown supervisors who had imparted knowledge to initiates throughout the ages. The Roshaniya also called themselves the Order. Initiates took an oath that absolved them of all allegiance except to the Order and stated, quote, I bind myself to perpetual silence and unshaken loyalty and submission to the Order. All humanity which cannot identify itself by our secret sign is our lawful prey, unquote. The oath remains essentially the same to this day. The secret sign was to pass a hand over the forehead, palm inward, the countersign to hold the ear with the fingers and support the elbow in the cupped other hand. Does that sound familiar? If you sit in a courtroom in just about any city in this land, you will see those signs exchanged between lawyers and defendants and judges. And you will see that whenever that these signs are exchanged, whoever initiated the exchange will usually, in fact, most often does, win the court case. The Order, of course, is the order of the quest, and the cult preached that there was no heaven, no hell, only a spirit state completely different from life as we know it. The spirit could continue to be powerful on earth through a member of the order, but only if the spirit had been itself a member of the order before its death. Thus, members of the order gained power from the spirits of the dead members. The Roshaniya took in travelers as initiates and then sent them on their way to found new chapters of the order, and they were called fellow travelers. You see, this order, as all before it, and all since, are socialists, communists. It is believed by some that the assassins were a branch of the Roshaniya. And branches of the Roshaniya are the Illuminated Ones, or the Illuminati, exist and still exist everywhere. One of the rules was not to use the same name and never mention, quote, Illuminati, unquote. That rule is still in effect today. And it's probably the breaking of that rule that resulted in Adam Weishaupt's downfall. Remember, folks, that we have really only just begun, and you are just beginning to understand, although some of you may think that you already understand, I can assure you that maybe a very small minority of you really do. Most do not. We have a long way to go in this history and in your own particular individual illumination. Oh, I just love it. I just love it, exposing these people who claim that they're doing everything for the benefit of mankind, who really have all the guilt for most of everything bad that has ever happened to mankind resting squarely upon their shoulders. Now, if you'd like a packet of information, if you'd like to know how to join CAGI, if you'd like to purchase my book, or if you'd like to donate to pay for the airtime of this show, make a check or money order out to WWCR. That's to pay for the airtime. And send it to Stan, along with your request for information and whatever else that you may wish.